خوشویستان یره دنجی امریکا له واشنگتن سلاویا سو جبار درهنه.
This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. United States President Joe Biden said the U.S. Supreme Court decision on Friday to overturn the constitutional right to abortion was a sad day that will deny women in America control of their own destiny.
They didn't limit it. They simply took it away. That's never been done to a right so important to so many Americans. But they did it. It's a sad day for the court and for the country.
The court on Friday took the dramatic step of overturning the 1973 landmark Roe v. Wade decision that protected abortion rights, the ruling that legalized it nationwide. It's a victory for many Republicans and religious conservatives who want to limit or ban the procedure. Biden said there were few things he could do by executive order and called on U.S. lawmakers to restore abortion rights with a federal law. And he called on voters to elect lawmakers and state leaders who would protect those rights. Meanwhile, U.S. lawmakers are sending President Biden the most wide-ranging gun violence bill Congress has passed in decades. The bill that passed the House on Friday is a compromised but measured progress on the issue and the partisan divide that persists. The Democratic-led chamber approved the election year legislation on a mostly party line vote following last month's mass shootings in New York and Texas. The night before, the Senate approved it by a bipartisan 65-33 margin, with 15 Republicans joining all Democrats in supporting a package that senators from both parties had crafted. Find more on our website, voanews.com, or follow us on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. A new study estimates that nearly 20 million lives were saved by COVID-19 vaccine during their first year. The AP's Jennifer King reports.
Scientists at Imperial College London used data from 185 countries, excepting China, to create their model. The main finding was that a catastrophic 19.8 million COVID-19 deaths were prevented by the vaccination effort in the first 12 months. That includes 1.9 million people in the United States alone. The model was based on estimates of how many more deaths than usual occurred. Using only reported deaths, the number saved is still a staggering 14.4 million. Lead author Oliver Watson.
We estimate that one in five deaths that occurred due to COVID-19 in low-income countries would have been prevented if those targets had been reached.
Adam Finn with the University of Bristol Medical School says the findings underscore both the achievements and the shortcomings of the vaccination campaign.
We can't just say, oh, well, we've learned what to do now and just give the vaccine to everyone and it'll be fine. It's more complicated than that.
I'm Jennifer King.
The World Health Organization is convening an emergency committee to consider if the spiraling outbreak of monkeypox warrants being declared a global emergency, AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Declaring the disease to be a global emergency would mean the UN Health Agency considers the outbreak to be an extraordinary event and that the disease is at risk of spreading across even more borders, possibly requiring a global response. It would also give monkeypox the same distinction as the COVID-19 pandemic and the ongoing effort to eradicate polio. However, many scientists doubt any such declaration would help to curb the epidemic, since the developed countries recording the most recent cases are already moving quickly to shut it down. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Leaders of Commonwealth nations are meeting in Rwanda's capital to tackle climate change, tropical diseases, and other challenges deepened by the COVID-19 pandemic. The summit for Commonwealth heads of state in Kigali culminates meetings this week that officials said yielded some success. The group of 54 nations comprises mostly former British colonies, and its head is Queen Elizabeth II. Prince Charles is representing his 96-year-old mother at the summit. Recapping our top story, United States President Joe Biden said the U.S. Supreme Court decision on Friday to overturn the constitutional right to abortion was a sad day that will deny women in America control of their own destiny. The court on Friday took the dramatic step of overturning the 1973 landmark Roe v. Wade decision that protected abortion rights, the ruling that legalized it nationwide. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey. VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I cannot describe the depths of my personal sorrow at the suffering of so many as I continue to deepen my own understanding of slavery's enduring impact.
That was Britain's Prince Charles addressing the Commonwealth Summit about slavery. Details coming up. Also, former Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos is reported to be in intensive care at a clinic in Barcelona. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Nigerian rights activists are reacting with outrage after a Nigerian politician and his wife were charged by British prosecutors with human trafficking with the intent to harvest organs. Ike Ikwarimadu is alleged to have smuggled a 15-year-old Nigerian boy into Britain to harvest his kidney for their sick daughter. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
Former Deputy President Ike Ikwarimadu and his wife appeared before the Uxbridge Magistrates Court Thursday, 2 days after they were arrested by London police. Prosecutors accused them of luring 15-year-old David Nwamini Ugbo from Nigeria to the UK to donate his kidney to their daughter. Prosecutors also accused them of forging documents to make Ugbo appear to be 21 years old. It's not clear if Ugbo was aware of the reason he was traveling, but a letter written by Ikwarimadu to the British High Commission in December stated they were going to the UK for organ donation. Ikwarimadu's daughter is reportedly battling a kidney disease. He and his wife were arrested on their way to Turkey to procure another organ after they allegedly were unable to continue the process with Ugbo. They denied the allegations on Thursday, but did not enter a plea and were held without bail. Prominent Nigerian human rights activists have denounced the politician on social media. The co-founder of the Bring Back Our Girls BBOG movement, Aisha Yusufu, tweeted, "How many missing people are related to organ harvesting? This is scary." Another activist, Rinu Odwala, said, "They really thought they would get away with it in the UK, because Nigeria is a place where criminals occupy public offices, commit crimes, and go scot-free." Odwala spoke to VOA via a voice messaging app.
The former deputy senate president might be involved in organ trafficking. It's disappointing, to say the very least. You know, the Nigerian image, our reputation keeps dwindling out there. Every day, our public officials make it harder for Nigerians to thrive out there. And we're forced to prove a point that we're not that image of our country.
Ikwarimadu's defense attorney, Gavin Irwin, described the allegations as preposterous Thursday. On Friday, supporters on social media pledged their support for Ikwarimadu, including a colleague, Senator Dino Melaye, who tweeted, "I stand with Ike." Ario Dari Atoye is the founder of the Nigeria Liberty Center. He says it is too early to make conclusions.
"It is the aggregate of the records available to the UK embassy and the hospital that will be able to expose whether they followed due process. Has any document been forged? Has there been any manipulation? All of this will come to the fore, possibly in the next adjourned date. This is not something that anybody can cover up."
The World Health Organization says a tenth of all global organ transplants are performed using illegally acquired organs. Under the UK's Modern Slavery Act of 2015, conspiracy to harvest the organs of a child is a serious offence, and perpetrators could face life imprisonment if found guilty. Ikwarimadu's next hearing is on July 7th. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Cameroon has deployed hundreds of troops along its border with Nigeria after attacks by Boko Haram militants forced more than 40,000 villagers over the past 2 months to flee the area. Cameroon's defense minister is visiting the border to assess the security situation and assure villagers that it is safe to return home. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Cameroon's military reports that Boko Haram incursions in Mayochanaga, an administrative unit on its northern border with Nigeria, have increased drastically since April. Each day, armed members of the Nigerian terror group cross over to Cameroon, attack villages and steal cattle and food, the military reports. Cameroon's defense minister Joseph Beti Asomo said Thursday President Paul Biya asked him to lead a delegation of top military officials to the border. Asomo, whose delegation was in Mokolo district, where Mayochanaga is located, says several hundred troops have been deployed to protect civilians and their goods. He said that self-protection groups must cooperate with the army. Asomo says all militias must henceforth be registered and controlled by local government officials and Cameroon military. He says militia group members should be people of unquestionable integrity. Asomo says government troops and local officials note that militias have been infiltrated by Boko Haram terrorists and adds that the military will energetically fight terrorists and bring back civilians trapped along the border with Nigeria. Usman Aliyu is from Duvan, a village on the border with Nigeria. He says except for a few elderly persons, almost everybody has escaped from Duvan. He spoke via a messaging app from Mokolo.
Duvan has got 10,000 population, and when I went there last week, I got only 15 people in Duvan. So I'm asking Mr. Minister to do something for us, please. Come and help us. Our people are sleeping on the mountain.
In May, villagers along Cameroon's northern border with Chad and Nigeria organized daily protests in front of government offices demanding the military protect them. Vuhud Degumi is mayor of the Mokolo district. He says if the military had responded more quickly to the villagers' plea, civilians would have been spared from fleeing their homes. He says the situation is getting worse as the days go by. He says several dozen villages have been destroyed over 3 weeks by Boko Haram and food and cattle stolen. Degume says more than 30,000 of the 40,000 Cameroonians who have escaped from their villages are hiding in bushes on the border with Nigeria. Degume said some of the fleeing villagers are finding refuge in host communities in safer border localities. Local media reports that Cameroon recently withdrew some of its troops from the northern border with Nigeria and Chad and redeployed them to fight separatist rebels in the west of the country. Cameroon's military dismissed the claims and said troops are always on standby to defend civilians when the need arises. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Art teachers in Uganda's government-owned schools have been staying at home for the last week after they were left out when science teachers were allocated raises in the 2022-23 budget. Some school heads have resorted to using peer-to-peer learning, while others are courting parents to put together additional payments to lure teachers back to the classroom. And a showdown loomed today with the government threatening to drop teachers from the payroll if they do not show up. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
12-year-old Olivia Nakati, a student in one of Uganda's government schools, has since last week been reporting to school but without sight of the teachers.
We are just coming up and down from school. We are not even studying. But sometimes we go and revise in our classes. I would request the government maybe to add something so that they continue teaching us.
In Uganda, teachers are grouped into groups, science-related or arts-related. Over 120,000 arts teachers in Uganda's government schools have refused to return to class until the government increases their salaries. The demands follow raises for science teachers in the Just Read 2022-2023 financial year budget. The teachers say the raises should be across the board. The government has urged the teachers to sit down with the Minister of Education and find other ways to deal with the issue instead of staying at home. Joyce Moriku Kaduchu is State Minister for Education.
Our doors are open for discussion, for dialogue, and to chat a way forward. You are the cream of the nation. You are the professionals as teachers. And dialogue is the key to solve any grievances you may have. So please, our dear teachers, do not abandon your professional job dialogue and we get a way forward.
President Yoweri Museveni has met with the teachers and promised to have the disparity corrected. In a new circular from the government, the teachers have also been given a deadline of today to return to class or be dropped from the payroll. The teachers don't seem inclined to relent on their stand despite the promises and threats. Philbert Baguma is the Secretary General of the Uganda National Teachers Association.
Our resumption of the school will depend on how fast they make the review and whether the outcome of the review is satisfactory and addressing a fair salary enhancement for all teachers. So for now, our members are advised to keep staying at home until government finds a lasting solution for the issues we have presented to them.
Some leaders are calling on parents to find ways of supplementing teachers' pay to have them return to class as government processes the pay rise. The teachers, who currently earn less than $500 a month, want an increase to about $1,300 monthly for secondary school teachers and about $420 as minimum wage for primary teachers. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Botswana is stepping up its effort to host the Kimberley Process Secretariat, which will house the offices of the Global Diamond Trade Body. President Mokgweetsi Masisi is due in Austria and Belgium this week to drum up support from Abrone Botswana. Reporter Mokondisi Dube has the details.
Austria is one of the countries bidding towards the Kimberley Process Secretariat, while Belgium is a key diamond industry player. Masisi says while in Europe, he will attempt to convince Austria to drop out of the race.
I will be going to Austria, Vienna, where I will meet with the country's leadership. They want the Kimberley Process Secretariat, yet they do not mine diamonds. I want to hear their reasons for wanting to host the secretariat.
This week, Botswana is hosting the Kimberley Process Intersessional Meeting as the chair of the certification scheme, which is held on a rotational basis. Botswana's Minerals Minister Lefoko Moahi says the Kimberley Process could be run better with the secretariat. He says as the Kimberley Process chair, Botswana will soon resume review visits, a process to ensure affiliates are compliant with diamond trade standards. The outbreak of COVID-19 had stalled the reviews.
Leading the KP has never and will never be an easy undertaking, especially without a substantive or a secretariat, so to speak. When we took over the chairmanship, we pointed out that one of our priorities is to restart the review visits. As a way of putting our money where our mouth is, we will be inviting a review visit in August and September this very year, 2022.
However, some lobby groups like the Kimberley Process Civil Society Coalition say the Diamond Trade Board is losing relevance and needs redirection. Abu Brima is a member of the Observer Coalition and says failure to act on Russia shows the narrow definition of conflict diamonds.
And we in civil society have been always asking for a better definition of conflict diamonds to include, you know, other conflicts and other violations of rights, environmental rights, you know, rights of communities, you know, health rights and so on. So, unfortunately, KP has been very reluctant to open up the definition of conflict diamonds.
The Kimberley Process was established in 2003 with the goal of halting the flow of conflict diamonds to fund rebel forces' activities. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Swuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our program from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. British Prince Charles expressed his personal sorrow today for the nightmare of slavery and its long-term impact as he addressed the opening of a two-day summit by the 54 member countries of the Commonwealth. Eugene Uwimana has details from Kigali, Rwanda.
Prince Charles' speech came as colonizing countries grapple with their often oppressive histories in Africa. Some have returned looted out and even remains of a murdered leader to their countries of origin, while others have expressed regret over their actions, which include lingering racism. The United States is considering reparations for descendants of the slaves who helped build the country's economy.
I want to acknowledge that the roots of our contemporary association run deep into the most painful period of our history. I cannot describe the depths of my personal sorrow at the suffering of so many, as I continue to deepen my own understanding of slavery's enduring impact. If we are to forge a common future that benefits all our citizens, we too must find ways, new ways, to acknowledge our past. Quite simply, this is a conversation whose time has come.
Charles and heads of government also reiterated the urgent needs to fight climate change, be prepared for future global shocks, and create strong synergy to mitigate the long-reaching effects of Russia's bloody invasion of Ukraine. One of the issues of discussion this year is how to speak with one voice on an issue like the Russia-Ukraine war, which has driven up food, fertilizer, and oil prices, hitting Africa particularly hard. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said more than 25 million tons of corn and wheat are piled up across Ukraine, allegedly held hostage by Russia, whose own would-be exports are entangled in Western sanctions.
One of the greatest affronts to everything we stand for is Russia's invasion of Ukraine and Putin's blockade of the ports that would otherwise be shipping food to the world's poorest people.
Charles highlighted other shocks the world is facing, the climate change and the global health crisis. He said the partnership with the Commonwealth member countries could be a shield.
Treasure the friendships we have built over these past 70 years and look forward to their deepening in the years ahead. As we build back from the pandemic that has devastated so many lives, as we respond to climate change and biodiversity loss that threatens our very existence, and as we see lives destroyed by the unattenuated aggression of violent forces, such friendships are more important than ever.
Rwanda is assuming the leadership of the Commonwealth Secretariat from the United Kingdom. Rwandan President Paul Kagame says his country will keep realizing the meaning of the Commonwealth.
Everything we do, including joining the Commonwealth in 2009, is aimed at making sure that our people are connected, included, and forward-looking.
More than 60% of the population of the Commonwealth countries are youth. Leaders say that's the engine of everything they are eyeing to achieve. Rwanda is hosting the CHOGM after Uganda in 2007. 15 years later, leaders of 54 member countries are back in Africa to forge new innovative ways of creating a common and a shared bright future, leaving no one behind. For African leaders, the target is to build a prosperous and resilient continent. That is an idea embedded in the African Union's Agenda 2063, Africa We Want. The leaders at the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting are expected to decide on membership requests from Togo and Gabon. The meeting ends Saturday. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 16th, the people of Somalia elected a new president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamed. The election was the culmination of a long and much-delayed process, with the country governed by a president whose four-year stint in office had expired in February 2021. The United States congratulates the people of Somalia on the conclusion of their national electoral process. We also congratulate Hassan Sheikh Mohamed on his election as the president of the Federal Republic of Somalia and look forward to working closely with him and the new government, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken. 4 years of political infighting have resulted in the neglect of critical issues. For Somalia to thrive, the national government and federal member states must quickly reconcile and together tackle the vital challenges facing Somalia. Two problems in particular must be addressed post-haste, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The first is the need to eliminate the danger posed by the Al-Shabaab terrorist organization. Somalia's security and the security of the region rely on us using every tool in our arsenal to fight terrorism. That means providing support to the African Union Transition Mission in Somalia, or ATMIS. It means using the Somalia sanctions regime to designate Al-Shabaab operatives who continue to threaten Somalia's peace and security. And it means alleviating the horrific humanitarian conditions that inspire extremism. The second deadly challenge the new government must address is the impending humanitarian disaster caused by the worst drought in four decades, affecting over 6 million Somalis, by skyrocketing food prices, and by Russia's brutal war of choice against Ukraine, which continues to prevent wheat and other foods from reaching Somalia and may push the country into famine. In April, the United States announced more than $200 million in additional assistance to respond to humanitarian needs in the Horn of Africa, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. Tied directly to the humanitarian situation is Somalia's economic well-being, which will depend on its ability to meet the conditions required for reaching completion point under the heavily indebted Poor Countries Initiative, she said. Somalia now has an opportunity to focus on the political, economic, and security reforms necessary to advance the interests of the people of Somalia, said Secretary Blinken. The United States looks forward to partnering with Somalia's leaders to achieve our shared goal of a peaceful, democratic, and prosperous Somalia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Tunisia's Interior Ministry said today it has information about serious threats to the life of President Kais Saied. Spokesperson Fadili Khalifa told the news conference that the goal was to undermine Tunisian public security and that the plot had been foiled. President Saied's opponents accuse him of a coup for steadily consolidating his powers to rule by decree and for preparing a new constitution that he plans to put to a referendum next month. Opposition to Saied's moves has broadened over recent months as early as all major political parties as well as the powerful labor union have come out against his plans, holding street rallies against him. While critics of the president say his moves have raised concerns over rights and freedoms won in the 2011 revolution, Saied says his moves are legal and were needed to save Tunisia from years of political paralysis and economic stagnation. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Bill Andretti, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.